Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Unfortunate Predicaments Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
What? You and me sharing a last name?
No, it's not quite that unfortunate. But this is car related, and it comes from William Kramer, who writes the following. He says, this is an amusing and true anecdote. Recently, I was trying to find yet another short circuit under the dashboard of my beloved 1970 MG Midget.
Oh, practically a brand new car.
Midget being the operative word maybe here. Picture this. I'm upside down. My back is resting on the car seat. You've been there before, Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
My legs are hanging over the headrest. You got it?
Got it. That's how I nap.
Anyway, he goes on to say, the back of my neck is resting lightly on the clutch and the brake pedals. A flashlight is in my mouth, right? Because you can't have a trouble light down there. You'll burn yourself, and the mouth is the best place to put it.
Yeah.
And I'm pulling at wires.
Well, we've all been there.
He says, I guess I rested my head a little bit too hard because the brake and clutch pedals depressed. You ready for this? Just enough to allow them to slip around either side of my neck and trapping me.
Excellent.
And of course, the footwell space is so tight down there that I couldn't get my arms close enough to move the pedals.
I love this.
Go ahead. Finally, after several long minutes spent imagining the guffawing that my death notice would create, I managed to get my right elbow, I'm trying to push this, in a position where it had barely enough strength to depress the clutch, giving my neck a nasty scratch. I got it, man. But allowing me to escape the pedals of death. I hope you'll keep that image in mind in the future when you advise people to look under the dashboard. Sincerely yours, William Kramer. P.S. Should I report this to the National Highway Traffic and Safety Administration as a safety defect? After all, there's no warning about this in the owner's manual.
Absolutely.
Actually, I think he needs to report it to the National Humiliation Administration. Well, thanks for sharing that image, William.
Yeah, that made my day.
Well, if your head is stuck between your pedals or stuck somewhere else, we'll try to help. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Katie calling from Baltimore.
Hey, Katie.
Katie with a K or a C?
With a K, a Y, an I, E, an A, and a T.
Good. you're matched, Tommy. What's up, Katie from Baltimore?
Well, I'm actually calling because my car is making a funny smell, and neither me or my husband has any idea what it is.
There's no chance. No. Any chance it's him?
He swears it's not.
Making a funny smell. And what's the nature of this smell?
And when do you get it?
Well, it kind of smells a little what I guess burning oil would smell like, but it only makes it like on kind of strange and odd occasions. Like if I hit a pothole or sometimes when I hit the brakes. Sometimes when I turn the car off and sometimes when I turn the car on. But then it'll go like 2 weeks without making the smell. And Tom says it's nothing to worry about, so I don't know what to do.
Oh, Tom is your husband?
Yes.
No, I thought it was this Tom. I said, wow, you've spoken.
No. But yeah, we bought it just a few months ago.
What kind of a car is this?
It's a 2003 Ford Focus wagon.
So you get this, and you're pretty confident that it's an oil-burning smell.
I guess. I mean, I've never really smelt what burning oil smells like, but it's incredibly pungent. And it makes you want to get out of the car. But
get out and run or just get out of the car? So you don't feel like you're in any kind of danger when you smell this, like things aren't going to burst into flames.
All my cars have this very same smell.
We noticed. And commingled with your smell and the cigars that you smoke, it's quite an adventure, I'll tell you. So what's happening, I think, so when you go over a bump.
Yeah, like if I hit a pothole or, you know, one of those manholes in the road.
Any other problems with the car?
No, it's in great shape. We bought it. It only had like 65,000
miles. Did you buy it from a private party?
We did.
Were they relocating to like Belarus?
Well, as a matter of fact, they were.
Well, I mean, one of the things that can, one possibility is that when you hit a pothole or a bump, somehow that's causing a crack in maybe the transmission, you know, a transaxle housing to open up a little bit and is, and as such, deliver a little shot of the oil, the gear oil, or the motor oil that's in this transmission to the hot exhaust system, maybe even the catalytic converter, and you get the smell. Either that or oil is leaking someplace, and then when you go over a bump, it splashes, and maybe splashes up, for example, onto the hot exhaust.
Okay. Is it something that I need to have taken care of right now? I mean, because it's happening so,
infrequently.
Like, kind of willy-nilly. Like.
And your mechanic has not looked at it yet.
No, my husband and his dad have looked at it.
Oh, that's no help.
I think you should take it someplace. And they should put it on the lift, because if there is, for example, a crack in the transmission case, it might be obvious. And also, you should check the levels. If the transmission oil level is low, then in fact, you might say, oh, geez, it's leaking.
It's going somewhere. And,
yeah. It could be serious. On the other hand, you might not want to know if it's serious.
No. Okay.
What do you think about that? What, if you had to spend...
That's always been what I've done with my cars. If something doesn't really happen... Until it happens, I don't want to know about it.
It's like having a growth on your on your forehead, like that thing you got growing up. He doesn't want to know what that is. But when he finds out it's a brain tumor, he said, oh, you know what? If you'd come in a couple of weeks ago, we could have taken care of that. I'm the proactive brother, and Tommy is the ignorant brother.
So look into it. Then.
Yeah,
don't
I think the reason it's happening is when you're changing the velocity of the car, okay, whether you're accelerating, decelerating, going over bumps, all those things are changing the direction that things are moving and putting forces to work that aren't there ordinarily. And when that happens, anything that's wrong, like a crack or a leak that's going to allow oil to move around and splash and drip on things, that's when that stuff is going to happen.
Huh.
So that's why you need to have somebody other than your father-in-law look at it.
Yeah. I think my father-in-law would probably take issue with that.
Well, he probably would.
Well, tell him to go out and buy a $6,000 Mohawk lift, and they can put one in the driveway and check this thing out. Good luck, Katie.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Bob from Wayland, Massachusetts.
Hey, Bob, what's going on?
From where?
Wayland.
Yeah, right around the corner from you.
Yeah. I think I've been there once or twice.
Once is all you need. Usually.
What's going on, Bob?
I just bought my wife a new car for her birthday. It's a brand new 2010 VW Beetle convertible. And the color that she wanted, they don't make. So we're going to have it painted her color.
Yeah.
The problem is the quotes I've gotten have been from under $2,000 to well over $5,000. I'm confused trying to figure out if it's really worth spending as much as $5,000 to do this.
And what, pray tell, is this color that was unavailable?
I thought you might ask that.
Yeah.
It's pink. And they don't make a pink VW.
They don't.
Well, for good reason. Is it a hot pink?
No, it's a very, very light pink. I think it's like the Mary Kay type of color pink.
Oh, I'm very familiar. Mary Kay pink.
Why are you familiar with it?
I don't know. I don't ask. So from 2 to 5, those have been the quotes.
I've got 5,000 a few places, but one place is from an auto body shop I've gone to many times, and I trust them. But I just want to really understand if it's really worth the money to spend the extra money there.
Hmm. And what color is the car now?
It's we got white to have a good base.
That's good.
So it looks great.
You couldn't
right
interest
now.
Her in maybe like a pink stripe?
How about I tried that, but
pink
that
seat covers?
I tried that as well. Now she definitely wants it pink. She deserves it.
She deserves it.
Absolutely.
Well, that being the case, I mean, I would imagine that obviously it doesn't need any body work, so it's just basically painting over what's there. They'll
right.
have to grind down basically what's there. They'll have to sand up all the clear coat to have a toothy base, so to speak, that the new paint can adhere to. And, of course, they're going to have to paint all the door jams, the doors. That's very time-consuming.
Sure.
You know, when you paint a car the same color, you can avoid repainting all of that stuff.
Right.
But when you're painting it a new color, Then you've got to paint everything. Otherwise, it looks like a $2,000 paint job.
Right, and that Mako $500 one I should stay away from, huh?
They still have that?
I don't know.
Actually, you know, you can go online. There's a website you can visit that tells you how to paint your own car.
I'll stay away from that
with
one.
Rollers. No, no, it's actually pretty good. If you're willing to put the effort in, it can come out pretty good.
Yeah.
As long as you're looking at it like from the moon.
What kind of things should I look out for, or should I? What are the most important things that they should do to make sure it lasts and looks
well,
great?
Well, attention to detail is obviously the most important. I mean, they're going to have to take all the old finish off, and the prep work is basically what it is, and how attentive they are to removing things. That's what costs a lot of money. Everything has to be removed instead of masked, and to do a really quality paint job that doesn't look like it was a repaint.
Right. So it doesn't sound like $5,000 is crazy to do.
No, $5,000 is probably the right price.
All right.
See, too bad you couldn't have gotten one that, like, fell off the truck and was all scratched and gotten it for a big discount.
Right.
Because it wouldn't have, even to fix up scratches and dents, wouldn't have put you much over that $5,000 figure.
Yeah, now she's been driving a minivan for, while our four kids have been growing up, so I figured she deserves a convertible and a nice car.
She does.
We'll be able to see her coming, that's for sure.
you'll know her. She'll be the only one driving around Boston with that.
Send us some photos.
I will do that.
You're a
All
good
right.
man, Bob.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Good luck, man.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
It is hard to believe that a paint job.
Oh.
I mean, you've never had a car that even cost $5,000. But,
no.
But could you imagine spending that kind of money on a paint job, on a new car?
Of course not. $5,000? I bought five cars for $5,000.
And a couple of homes. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, Tom and Ray. This is Penny, or Penelope, calling you from Salem, Oregon.
Hi, Penny. We'll call you Penny if that's okay.
That's fine with me, yes.
All right.
I don't really have a question about my car. I have a question about something else. Why is it that everybody mispronounces the word kilometer and pronounces it kilometer?
Kilometer.
Am I just getting to be a persnickety old lady? I find it very annoying. I mean, they don't talk about a kilogram, do they?
Kilogram.
No, they don't.
Yes, well, so this somehow rubs you the wrong way.
Well, it just seems so silly. It's a bit like nuclear, isn't it?
No. Nuclear, that pronunciation is born out of a misspelling of the word, right? Nuclear is misspelled the word. Kilometer is just a putting the emphasis on a different syllable.
A different syllable.
Yeah.
Right. I got that right away.
And I think both pronunciations are perfectly acceptable.
You do?
Yes.
You talk about a kilogram.
No, I wouldn't.
No.
I wouldn't be in favor of the kilogram, but
it's the same principle, isn't it? If you're going to talk about a kilometer.
No, you're right.
Yeah, you know, it should be kilometer. I agree, because the meter should be the part that's emphasized, because we all know what a meter is.
But it just doesn't sound right.
Just as kilometer. the gram is kilogram is emphasized, because it's 1,000 grams. So it should make sense that the gram is emphasized. So kilometer, I agree with you.
Yes.
So those beautiful spring plants that come out with yellow blooms, what do you all call those? We call them forsythia. And I know you all call them forsythia.
Yes, well, since plants are usually named after people, it was a Mr. Forsyth who discovered it, so it would be forsythia.
It should be. Thank you for educating us. Henceforth, I shall call them forsythia. Yeah. Well, I guess things get, parts of the language get modified to suit the culture.
Well, I mean, if you looked it up.
I think both of them are accepted.
Yeah. I think you'd find both of them are there.
You would?
I think so.
Okay. I don't know. Check it out.
So is this all that's frosting your shorts today? I mean, is this?
Well, they say it in England as well.
Oh.
Yes, it's not that it's an American thing. And, I mean, over here you don't use kilometers much. In Canada, yes, but I don't know how they pronounce it up there.
I do know they put an A on the end of it. Eh? that much I know, but other than that, I can't help you. Well, I'm glad we solved this, and I'm glad I know about Mr. Forsythe.
I hope that's right. It was a pure guess plucked out of the air.
Oh, so you could be making stuff up just like we do.
Yes, I could, couldn't I?
Well, thank you for calling. And
the real question is, what do you do when someone says it? Do you just laugh?
It depends how stroppy I'm feeling.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've had people correct me on plant names all the time, and then I'll hear someone pronounce it the other way. So
yeah.
All right, well, we'll defer to you from now on, Penny. We'll be calling you for our pronunciation.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Every week,
day after day.
Thank you.
Thanks for your help. May you have many more kilometers before you.
Thank
kilometers.
You very much indeed.
Not more kilograms, but no. Kilometers. See you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, look. I want to take you back. Think way, way back to last week.
Yeah, okay.
The sun was shining.
Yeah?
Birds were chirping.
Yeah, I can hear.
You were sleeping on a park bench.
That was me.
You came in with me to do a show, and I gave out a new puzzler.
Yes, yes.
Do you remember the puzzler?
No.
Well, you can lead a knucklehead to water. Yes, but it was yet another puzzler from my popular...
Oh, the coin weighing series.
Exactly, the coin weighing
series.
Right. I'll be back with the whole puzzler and the answer in just a minute, so stay tuned.
Let's drive away. Let's hit the road. We'll leave the spotlight to the pretty boys and girls. See the fireworks glitter through the smoke. Let's drive away, say, here we go. We'll send a postcard from the desert before we lose our way with only one canteen of water. Constellations fill our eyes before we drown. Walking all night home to make it back to town. And we'll make it back to town just in time to save our lives. Let's drive away. It's true, you know. I always wanted you to drag me from this paradise so we could freeze together in the snow.
And even though Static promises to do a better job interrupting future radio signals whenever it hears us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler.
Mm.
And this was yet another in my enormously popular coin-weighing series of puzzlers. But this one had a little twist to it and, of course, a hint. But the hint was buried in a pile of obfuscation and whatnot. But here it is.
Yeah.
You have seven stacks of coins, each with 100 coins. So seven stacks of 100.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
That's the hint that there's a lot of coins. Your job, figure out which of those stacks are made of counterfeit coins. Notice I said stacks, not stack. There could be one bad stack. There could be several bad stacks. No bad stacks or all bad stacks. You just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what you do know. Real coins weigh 10 grams each. Phony coins weigh 11 grams. And each stack is either completely real or completely phony. Got it?
Got it.
So if you did the math, you'd know that a real stack would weigh 1,000 grams and a phony stack would weigh 1,100 grams.
Gotcha.
You with me? Anyway, you have an analytical scale, accurate to within a tenth of a gram, that you're going to use to weigh the coins. It'll give you a number. It'll tell you how many grams, how much weight is on the scale, like your bathroom scale, you know.
Hmm.
So the question is, what's the fewest number of weighings you would need to determine which of the stacks, if any, is made up of counterfeit coins? And you'd have to be able to identify the stacks when you're done. So, oh, yeah, stack two, stack four. And how come, is it?
That you can do it in one way.
You can do it in one weighing.
Well, why wouldn't you just do the standard classic old solution to a similar problem you've given us many years ago? You take...
Several times many years ago.
You take one coin from stack one, two from stack two, three from stack three. Why wouldn't that tell you?
Well, what if in fact it was 10 grams over? Okay. You wouldn't know counterfeit coin came from stack 7 and 3.
Yeah.
6 and 4, right?
Right. Okay, that's no good. That's, so we'll have to have, but some combination like that.
Something like that.
So that the things don't add up.
There you go. And here's how we're going to make it not add up.
Go ahead.
We're going to take one from the first, two from the second stack.
Four.
There you go.
Eight. 16, 32, 64. That's it.
Okay. So no matter what number you wind up with over, you can always...
There's only one. It's unique.
It's unique. And it, for example, if you are 7 grams over, the only way that you could have 7 grams over would be if pile one, pile two, and pile three were overweight. Okay, so you because you had four coins from...
One, two, four.
Four. That's the only way you come
That's
up with seven.
That's right.
Okay. If it was 63 grams over, yeah, it would be all the stacks except
the
last
one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Brilliant, eh?
Very good. Very, very good.
So who's our winner?
Our winner this week is Deborah Lee from Los Angeles, California. And for having her answer selected at random from all the correct answers that we got, Deborah's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division, with which she can get a copy of Born Not to Run.
That's one of our collections of great disrespectful car songs, like the ones you hear during our breaks. And Born Not to Run can be yours, Deborah, for being this week's Puzzler winner.
I bet she can hardly contain her excitement.
I know I can't. Anyway, we have a new Puzzler coming up, so stay tuned for that. But first, you can ask us your car questions by calling us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Georgia from Westport Island, Maine.
Georgia.
Maine.
Yep. Westport Island. Where, pray tell, is Westport Island?
Well, you leave Bath and drive about 8 miles and go east.
Oh, okay. It would make sense you'd have to drive east to get to an island on the water. But that's anyway, Georgia, what's going on?
Well, I have a 2008 Suburban that has developed a sort of unusual noise, and I'm going to imitate it.
Wow.
Yeah, well, it's in the engine somewhere. It goes off and on. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't.
Do you have to be moving when you hear this?
No, it's you know it's moving or not. And it sounds as though there's a sort of an amorous couple under the hood. Or the grandchildren say it sounds just like Darth Vader breathing.
Oh, it sounds like Darth
Vader. So if you start the car in the morning...
It's more in the morning than it is during the day, but sometimes it'll come on during the day. And they cannot hear it at our dealer.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're not listening carefully, but we we have not left it there overnight, which is one thing.
It makes this noise in the morning.
Not always.
Not always.
Not always.
And it's this...
Sounds like my brother after he's had that second glass of wine.
Yeah.
Jeez. We usually lead him away from the table so he doesn't fall head first into his plate.
So does it make it, if it's going to make noise, does it make it as soon as you start it in the morning?
Sometimes.
And sometimes not.
And sometimes not.
And when does it come? Just as you're driving along?
As you're driving along, you'll suddenly, we'll turn the car talk off, and unfortunately, and listen, and you'll hear it. We don't hear it over the radio or our conversation.
And you don't hear it over the engine, per se. In other words, once you're driving at 30 miles an hour, it's going to get drowned out?
Yes.
Now, does it sound like it's coming from under the hood as opposed to inside the truck?
When we lift up the hood, we don't hear it as much.
Right. Well, you don't hear it as much because the hood, the noise of the engine running,
yep,
will drown it out.
That's it.
Yeah. So I have a funny feeling it's coming from the heater.
Oh.
And it may be coming from something as simple as the blower motor. The next time it does it, try operating the blower at different speeds.
Or what if we turn off the blower?
You could turn the blower off. I'm not sure you can turn it off completely in this car.
Yeah.
But there are also vacuum-operated doors in the heater that can make this kind of sound. They actually direct the heat from defrost to your feet and whatever.
Oh, yes.
So as you move that lever or press the buttons on the control, whatever, however it happens on this thing, I don't know. But as you change the direction of the air, you are actually operating these little vacuum or in some cases a little electric motors. And these things can make that same kind of a...
That's what it is. That's just what it sounds like.
Well, here's what you can do. If it in fact is that, you might be able to get it to make the noise with the engine off.
Oh, by turning on the ignition and then the fan.
Exactly. Which you don't often do. I mean, everyone gets in, they turn the key on, they start the engine.
And then we start it up.
And the engine is running while all this other stuff is running. But it's possible to turn the engine off, turn the key back on, and see if you're still getting the grandpa wheeze out of this thing.
Okay, but the grandchildren will be very disappointed if we fix it because they like the Darth Vader.
Well, you can leave it. You can leave it, Georgia, but at least you'll know what it is. And if that's what it is, you can ignore it.
Thank you. I shall try all of those suggestions, and I thank you very much.
Let us know your make out.
Okay, I will do.
See you later.
Good
luck. Thanks, gentlemen.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Curtis in Portland, Oregon.
Hey, Curtis, what's going on?
I have a question about my 1986 Vanagon. Crazy is stealing it piece by piece, and I need to move it.
Someone is
stealing it?
Yeah.
Piece by piece.
A couple weeks ago, I was needed to move a couch, and I park it far away from my house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as I went to go turn on the car, I noticed the huge hole in the floor where somebody had stolen my stick shift.
Oh,
and
really?
I looked underneath. And everything seemed pretty fine, and so after cursing for a while, I left it there. And I went back the following week, and I noticed that somebody had stolen the linkage. And so I'm kind of wondering if I can move it. The city of Portland has been trying to tag it as an abandoned vehicle.
And they have a good case, I might add.
They might.
So I want to move it before they tow it and before somebody, you know, steals the rest of the pieces from it. So
yeah.
Well, you can get it into first gear. You don't know what gear it's in at this point.
No, I can't remember what I parked it in.
Well, what you can do is you can start it up, okay, and with your foot on the clutch, and then let the clutch out and see if the thing moves, because if it's in one of the forward gears, except unless it's in fourth or fifth, you can just drive it.
Sure.
Okay. You're not going to drive it very far, obviously, because you can't shift. And then you'll have to find another Vanagon. You're going to find out, by the way, when you go look for this shifter, you're going to find out why they stole yours. Because that linkage must be all worn out on theirs, and they couldn't find the pieces to replace it.
Mm.
And they must have combed the Portland area. And they said, are you kidding me? Look at this.
Is it very difficult to replace? I assume not, because they did it on the side of the street.
No, it's not difficult to replace. I think the hard part's going to be to find it.
To find the piece.
Yeah, to find the pieces. Exactly right. So did they take the actual shifter handle, too, like, or just the linkage bars? They took everything.
The whole thing.
The
whole thing from when you hold on to it all the way into the transmission.
Boy, that was kind of mean, huh?
It was.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think if you went online, you might be able to locate one.
Yeah, just like a junkyard shop or something like that.
Yeah, call around the junkyards, and when they tell you, we don't have one, but we've had plenty of people looking for them, ask them to describe those people, and maybe you can find out what happened to your stuff. But it may be harder to find. I can't honestly tell you how hard it is to locate these pieces, but I'm guessing it's going to be close to impossible.
Yeah,
you may have to shift from now on with ropes. Yeah, no, and the thing is, you know, without this, you can't drive the thing.
Or only very slowly, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, if you find it neutral, for example, or reverse, which means you can't drive it, with an assistant, you might be able to have that assistant move the rod that comes out of the transmission and find the other gears for you. So ideally, you'd like to find second gear, and you can drive. You might decide you want to drive it in second gear. Forever, right?
Yeah.
Where do you go with this thing, or not go, that it was parked in this abandoned spot for so long?
Well, I don't really drive very much. I pretty much bike everywhere in Portland because it's a pretty bike friendly city.
Yeah. If you considered taking up residence in the van,
yeah. I always think that I'm going to find a bum in it whenever I bike up to it. So.
Yeah, you may. That's what's going to happen next. Well, good luck, man.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. See you all later. Right. Oh, boy. Bye. Oh, boy. 888.
Where do these people come from?
I don't know. We have a lot of nuts to listen. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Megan from Seattle.
Hi, Megan. What's going on?
I'm worried about my friend Kathy.
Is that Kathy with a C or a K?
It's Kathy with a C, but with only an E at the end.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, that might make a difference.
Okay.
Yeah,
yes, I guess so.
So what's the story here?
Well, I don't drive with her very often, but I took a short ride with her last week and started to smell something noxious coming from the air vent blowing right on my face.
In her car, obviously.
In her car.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, you don't usually mention your friend's odors, so I kept silent, but the smell got worse and worse, and finally I realized it was mothballs.
Oh.
So she's apparently had a mouse problem.
See, now, guys, if I were in a car with another guy, even if I didn't know him, and I smelled something, the first thing I'd say is,
What is that?
Jeez! What did you eat for dinner last night? How many burritos did you have? I mean, guys would just say that.
Yeah.
I think even if I were riding with, like, the Pope, I'd say, hey, Pope, I mean, with all due respect to me, jeez.
What the heck did you have?
Take a shower.
Well,
that's a pretty closed environment, the Pope-mobile.
Yeah, so you were discreet.
Yeah, when I realized it was mothballs, I became indiscreet and started trying not to breathe and gagging and opening the windows and saying, why do you have mothballs in your car?
Oh, so she clearly put them in there.
Yes.
And you did mention it to her for the mice.
Yes. She claims they were doing the can-can on her windshield wipers.
Uh-huh.
And I guess she'd heard, possibly from Car Talk, that mothballs will keep mice away from the car.
Is that what we said?
I don't know, but she's an NPR.
We don't know either.
It's probably, you know, lots of people contribute stuff to our website and do suggest humane ways of getting rid of mice. I mean, of course, the time-honored method is the cat.
Yeah.
And we probably wouldn't have recommended anything that would hurt the little guys.
Right. Well, I'm pretty sure she's going to start dropping them in my mailbox now that I've made her take the mothballs out from underneath the ventilation system.
Yeah, they're bad. They're bad for you to breathe.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Are they in fact toxic?
They have naphthalene or something, or benzene. I mean, they're one of those enes.
Yeah.
You know, deathene, I think it is.
Yeah, no, they're not good for you.
Well, that's my concern. She can't smell them.
Oh, because the first thing it does is it wipes out your sense of smell. That kills those brain cells.
That may explain a lot.
Yeah, that's probably not a good thing to do. On the other hand, you get desperate when you have mice.
I don't know how to stage an intervention other than I'm just afraid that if she sees one more mouse, she's just going to go back to the mothball solution.
Well, we do have now on our site, because we used to rely on folklore and black magic and myths and whatnot when people questioned us about these kinds of things.
But now we have a bona fide
biologist who contributes to our site, who uses alternative methods to get rid of these, you know, like psychotherapy. and altering mouse behavior and all that. So you might want to visit our website and see what she has to say.
Okay.
Because it might be very beneficial. But in any case, the mothballs are probably a bad idea. I don't think they hurt the mice necessarily, but they might hurt you, and they might more than that hurt your friend who's driving the car all the time.
Exactly.
And where did she put the mothballs? In the car?
No. She seems to think that Toyota, in their infinite wisdom, gave her a little mothball tray under the hood. It's right by the air intake for the ventilation system.
Oh, so it's got that's a conduit right to your brain cells.
Oh.
Exactly.
Yeah. I know exactly where she put them. And that's not what the tray is for.
No, I assumed not.
Yeah. So tell her to get them out of there and send her to our website, cartalk.com, and maybe she can get some better advice than we could give.
Okay, I'll try that.
Thanks for being a good friend, Megan. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, look, we have to take a short break, and when we come back, it'll be time for the new puzzler.
I can hardly wait.
Yeah, and I can hardly wait for you to forget it as soon as I say it.
Forget what?
Exactly. Well, the upcoming puzzler this week is from my Play by the Numbers series, and it's quasi-automotive, actually.
Huh.
And we'll be right back with that and more of your car questions in just a minute, so please stay tuned. Got a tow. And even though the Swiss consider dropping their neutrality whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
From your Play by the Number series.
That's what I said? Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. Here goes. You ready?
Yeah.
This was submitted by Paul Mulick, who's sent in quite a few puzzlers over the years, and most of them are pretty good, and this is no exception. He writes, "Your recent feeble attempts with the puzzler have forced me to resubmit a puzzler I sent in some time ago.
Oh.
The fact that you have not used it, I can only ascribe to gross negligence on your part." So here goes. These days, almost every car on the road has a digital... That was the automotive part. Did you miss it?
Yeah, I missed it.
Has a digital clock, which gives the hour and the minute, but not the second.
Ah.
Okay?
Yeah.
At various times of day, such as 5 minutes before six, the clock will display three of the same digit. In this example, three fives, right? It'll say 5:55. You with me?
Yeah.
Here's the question. Nice and sweet and short. How many times during the course of a complete day, that's 24 hours, does a car's digital clock display a time that has three of the same digit? Right?
Oh.
Simple enough, right?
Sounds it.
Yeah, well, let's see how you do. Anyway, let's see. Next week, let's see if you can even remember it. And then we'll work on solving it.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the bottom of a Chahiti lightweight foldable heated camping chair with four heat settings. Ooh, four. Ooh. Rechargeable lithium-ion battery, coil-free soft woven heating elements to provide up to 145 degrees of heat across the seat and back. Fire and water resistant fabric in stylish black camo and car charger, and send it along with a pair of asbestos boxer shorts. Because you never know when things can go wrong. To Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
And if you have a question for us, give us a call. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Greetings and salutations.
Greetings and salutations to you, my friend.
This is Alon, A-L-L-O-N, calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
A-L-L-O-N?
Alon.
Yeah. Means oak tree in Hebrew.
Ah.
And my question is, I do have a 1967 Plymouth Fury VIP.
Oh, really? A Fury?
A Fury. Well, I decided I want to save energy, so I sold my 2008 Mitsubishi Evolution and bought the 1967 Plymouth.
Ah, and you wanted something that you could put a vast array of solar collectors on, because I think that car maybe held the world record for the greatest amount of surface area of any car ever made.
Almost, because every time I open the trunk and I have people around, we all are trying to decide, is this a three-body trunk or a four-body trunk?
Oh, it's at least three.
This is my daily driver. I bought it with 70,000 original miles.
And you bought it because it has such superb handling.
Well, I'll tell you why I bought it. I don't drive much anymore. I'm a real estate broker, and I sit now most of the time in the office. And I was paying $800 a month on my Evolution, and I drive 4 miles a day. And I said, I want something reliable, something pretty, and something...
Okay, so far you've got two strikes against you.
Actually, you know, I go into the casinos and stuff, and I'll valet the car, and I'll valet it next to the Rolls Royces and the Maseratis and the Lamborghinis, and you know what? My car is the one that catches your eye because it's so pretty.
Yeah.
It was
a unique car, I will admit.
Thank you.
It was a unique car, and pretty, I wouldn't go so far as saying pretty, but it's beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So you have a 400 cubic inch engine in this thing.
Actually, it's a 383.
Oh, you got the economy model.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. And there's my question.
Uh-huh.
I'm having arguments with my friend, especially with my friend Eyal, and the argument is that the car has a 383 engine with a two-barrel carburetor.
Yeah, you can put a four-barrel on that thing if you want. Is that your question?
My argument is that if I'm going to put a four-barrel carburetor, my gas consumption is going to drop.
You burn less gas?
Yes. And I'll tell you why. That's why I'm calling you.
Yeah.
I have I think now the carburetor is 450 or 500 CFM, the two-barrel.
For those who don't know, that's cubic feet per minute.
Yeah.
For the uninitiated here.
Okay, so when I drive now, just slowly, when every time I accelerate, I open the whole 500 CFM. if I have a 650 four-barrel,
yes. Yes.
Then I open only half of it, which is 325 CFM. And therefore, I'm going to use less gasoline.
Well, in theory, that's correct. But the basic physics involved here really override all of these things. And the basic physics are that you have a vehicle that weighs X number of pounds, and you're trying to accelerate it from 0 miles an hour to X miles an hour. And in order to accomplish that, you have to put in a certain amount of energy, okay? And that energy comes in the form of the gasoline that's being combusted. How you put that in, it will determine how fast you get from zero to whatever speed you're trying to get to. So if you're trying to get from zero to 60 in 15 seconds, it doesn't really make much difference, I don't think, because the weight of the car and the aerodynamics of the car and all those other factors are really the major determinants. And whether or not you have this other carburetor on there is really going to affect how fast you can go at the other end. So if you have a 650 CFM four-barrel, you might be able to squeeze out another 5 or 10 miles per hour at the high end. So instead of being able to go 105, you might be able to go 120.
I see what I'm saying.
You have the potential, I think, to waste more gas with the bigger carburetor. Even driving around the city. Wouldn't you think so, Tommy? If you accelerate hard.
I would agree to that.
You're going
to
open all four barrels.
Yeah.
And you're going to get from zero to 60, not in 15 seconds, but in 11 seconds.
And that's going to cost you.
You know, now my friend Ayali is correct, and I don't know what to say.
Well, we don't either. We're flabbergasted that somebody agrees with us.
So I was thinking of your country. I thought maybe he got to you before I did. You know, maybe there was some payola involved.
Yeah. And not to mention the fact that it's going to cost you a lot of money. Oh. To put the new intake manifold on, because you have to change the manifold.
I bought an Offenhauser aluminum manifold for $100. Somebody gave me an old AFB carburetor for free. I think the rebuild kit cost me, you know, I don't know, $10, and I think the gasket cost me another, you know, $20.
Oh, then go for it, man.
Now I'll be able to burn rubbers, you know.
Sure.
So here's the thing. Why don't you, in the interest of science, why don't you
install everything
and drive it for enough time to find out what your mileage is.
All right.
And then you already know what your mileage is with the old carburetor, the two-barrel, right?
Yeah.
What are you getting now?
About 13 and a half in town.
13 and a half in town.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrific. And you're hoping maybe to bump that up to like 13.7?
I was hoping 13.75. But...
Yeah, we're with you, man. We're with you.
Well, you might. You know what? It can't hurt to try. This is how discoveries are made.
That's right.
You know, and might be completely counterintuitive that if you put a bigger carburetor on there, that you're going to get you will improve something called volumetric efficiency. You know, by having that other carburetor on there, and whether or not that improves your mileage remains to be seen.
Okay.
But you being a scientific kind of guy,
you'll let us know.
Gentlemen, I want to tell you that I love you. I'm wearing now, as we speak, my Ched House of Croissants splashed over Car Talk shirt. And I appreciate everything that you do for us.
Well, we appreciate your call, and good luck with your 67 Fury.
If I'm correct and the gas consumption will go down, I'm going to call you back and go, na, 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 na.
By all means.
All right.
By all means.
Hardly wait.
do your best.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Thanks for your call.
I love it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's a fun guy to talk to. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Becky from Thornton, Colorado.
Hey, Becky, what's going on in Colorado?
Well, I have an 05 Chrysler PT Cruiser convertible.
Uh-huh.
We have an issue that we have too many cars now because we've sold our house and we're going to be living full-time and traveling and working out of our motorhome.
And how many cars do you have, pray tell?
Well, we have the motorhome and we have two cars. And you can only pull one car behind a motorhome.
At least legally.
Yeah, well.
Unless you do it at night.
So we have an 03 Yukon that we're going to pull behind the car because we need space in the Yukon.
Oh, you don't have enough space in the motorhome.
Well, no, not for all of our work files and stuff.
Oh, I see.
And we're going to be going up to Alaska.
Oh, then you have to keep the Yukon.
Right,
obviously.
Right. So the dilemma is, do we sell the PT Cruiser or do we store it? And we know storing's not that great a thing for a car, but we know they don't make the convertibles anymore. And we're thinking, well, maybe it'll go up in value because we have a history of kind of buying high and selling low.
Oh, yeah, like my brother's done that with the stock market. He buys high and sells low, yeah.
And we'd like to maybe turn that around.
I see. So you think at some point this is going to be worth a lot of money?
Well, we don't really know. That's why we called you.
Well, I'm going to say that we do know, and I don't think it's going to appreciate.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's one of those cars that's going to be sought after.
Oh, okay.
You know, not like, for example, my brother's Miata.
Oh, now you're talking about a car.
Or the 64-and-a-half Mustang that my husband bought the very first day they were available.
Yeah. Does he still have that car?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the mistake.
Yeah, that we should have kept that one. But, you know, you can't know. But I think, given the evidence, the PT Cruiser might not be the best choice. Although, you know, you could certainly try it. How long would you put it in storage?
Well, we're going to be in we don't know, maybe a couple of years.
Let me get this right. Are you guys in, like, the witness protection program or something?
We're going to be working for the Good Sam Club.
Yeah, what is that?
Oh, it's the largest club of RV owners in the world.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And we're working for their directory and going around and reviewing RV parks and writing it up.
Oh, I see. Well, that's a nice gig.
This year, our territory is Alaska and the Yukon.
You'd be doing that in the winter?
No, for summer.
Oh, okay.
Oh, good idea.
So they might assign that to the rookies. Well, so that's kind of fun. So maybe you do store the thing. I don't know, but it's not likely to go up in value in 2 years.
Okay.
Maybe 20 or 30 years.
I may not have 20 or 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, in 20 years, it may be a curiosity.
I see. Okay.
You know, not unlike something like a 67 Plymouth.
Like the Fury, huh?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's more than 40 years, and that car is a curiosity, too. But it's not, in my estimation, not a collector's item. But what do I know?
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think this one's going to be either. But you never know. You should check around with people who know more about that stuff than we do. I think we would agree that it's probably not a car that's going to appreciate a lot in value.
That's what I would say, too.
Okay, well, that's what we were trying to find out. And we figured you ought to have a good insight on it.
We have an opinion.
Yeah.
We have an opinion. Whether or not it's worth anything remains to be seen. Good luck, Becky.
Okay.
Send us a postcard from the wilds of Alaska.
Will do.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK.
Why would anybody want to go to Alaska?
Oh, in the summertime, it's beautiful. In fact, I booked a cruise for you. I'm not going, but you're going.
No, I'm not.
Oh, yes, you are.
Oh, no, I'm not.
You'll stop complaining about the cold, sure enough, buddy. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Dave calling from Mays Landing, New Jersey.
Hey, Dave, what's going on, man?
Well, I got a 2002 Chevy Trailblazer that's making a lot of front-end noise. I mean, it just grinds, it burps, it chirps, it does everything imaginable, but it doesn't do it every day.
Uh-huh.
So what it does is you go over a bump or you press the brakes and it goes... Or, recently, it started doing this. Now, this is a manly truck, man. You know, it's not supposed to go, boom, boom. At least it's just crying.
Yeah, that whimpering is not good.
No, that's not good.
But the problem is I've had it to the repair shop. And it's like going to the dentist with a toothache.
Yeah.
It didn't make a sound all day.
Oh, no, when I go to the dentist with a toothache, he pulls a tooth out anyway.
Yeah, he doesn't care which tooth.
I've identified the wrong one, that's my problem.
Yeah, that's right. Make sure you mark it with magic marker.
So let's get this. You're driving along. Everything is right with the world.
Right.
You go over a bump of some kind.
Yeah, over a bump.
You go over a bump.
Okay, and then the noise is?
Like a grinding.
Oh, just as you're going over the bump.
Over the bump.
And then it goes away.
Yeah, then it goes away.
Huh.
Well, I think you have a broken stabilizer link.
Stabilizer link?
Yeah. You have a broken stabilizer link, and because this thing is an all-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah, it's four-wheel drive.
Yeah, you have axles in the front, and I think the broken stabilizer link, occasionally when you hit a bump, is hitting that spinning axle. And you're getting this...
Yeah. Hey, you've got it good. You want to talk to my truck?
And then sometimes it'll do it if you even make a turn. If, for example, if the noise is predominantly coming from the, say, left front, if you were to make a hard right-hand turn, you could probably get the same thing without hitting a bump.
So you think it's a stabilizer link?
I think so. Either that or a wheel's ready to fall off.
Well, we checked everything. We've had it up on the lift looking.
You have? Well, they would have seen the stabilizer link, I would have thought. unless they were just assuming that it was something. In that case, I'll go to plan B.
Okay.
Which is a bad wheel bearing. And a wheel bearing can be quiet, and all of a sudden, it can start making that noise.
Okay.
Or it could be the freewheeling hub mechanism that's making that noise. In any case, it's going to cost you thousands. No.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Don't.
Go back and have them check for the wheel bearings or the hubs.
Okay.
All right.
Wheel bearing hubs.
Yeah, I don't. If they looked at the suspension, they couldn't have missed the stab link.
Yeah, and it does it sometimes when you depress the brakes.
Oh.
Now, does that help you at all?
A little bit. Well, it lends credence to the theory that it's either the bearing or the hub.
Okay.
Good luck, man.
Hey, thanks a lot. We enjoy your show.
You can always take those axles out for the summer. You won't need them.
Okay. That's good. No, I'm off. I'm on the beach all the time.
Oh, all right. You'll need them. Good luck, David.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Michaela Ross. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Tupelo, Salmon Roll, Fried Turbo, Pastry Dough, Age Pernod, Roasted Crow, Sloppy Joe, Red Bordeaux, Lunch to Go is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our cruise director is Eaton Doolittle. Our TSA screener is Pat Matukas. Our director of disaster preparedness is Evan Stubetzi. Our short order cook is Diego Varisi. Our staff dog walker is Donna P. DeLeg. Our collection agent is you effing well better. Our repo man is Darius Grabham. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Mandy Luz Cruz. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey Cheatham and Howe is you, Louis Dewey, known to the masticated sidewalks in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And remember this, don't drive like my brother.
And remember this, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1118, stumble through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, three things that are great about electric vehicles.
And three things about electric vehicles that blow chunks. Hey, we're trying to be even-handed here, right? Yeah. Check out a good overview of the pluses and minuses of cars that plug in all this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham and Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though scientists confirm that unicellular organisms can roll their eyes whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.